All right, welcome back, listeners, to the Laracast Snippet. This will be the final episode of the year. Starting to wrap everything up. Such a good feeling when you feel the inbox going down and everyone's sort of has one foot out the door. We're all trying to finish up for the holidays so we can finally take a damn break. And it couldn't come soon enough. I always notice every year around this time, I start feeling depleted. Like, I think if you will go to last year's episode right around this time, I think I have an episode where I talk about being worn out. And I don't know if it's just by this time every year, I'm kind of done and I need some real time off. Or do you remember how when you were in school and you had some paper you had to write, you would always finish it just in time? Like, how often did you have that report or that paper finished a week in advance? Never happened. You would take as much time as humanly possible to get it done. So maybe that's what's going on here, is I know time off is coming, and I have just set my energy levels to fit that. And now, strangely enough, right when we're almost there, I'm done and I can't do anymore. Maybe that's what's going on. But either way, I'm happy to have some time off with family. I can't wait to watch awful Christmas movies. Even the good Christmas movies are actually awful. For me, Home Alone was the movie I grew up with as a kid. It was a core requirement. You have to watch Home Alone every single year. And I watched it the other day. And I don't know why, but for some reason this time, I made the connection how horrible this kid is. If you watch it, it is beyond horrible. Because here's how it plays out. And yes, we're going to talk about this on the Laracast Snippet. You need to hear this. So Kevin realizes that Harry and Marv are going to break into his house and take all of his stuff. So what would be the responsible thing to do? Maybe call the cops, right? Maybe that would have been the responsible thing the second he woke up and his parents weren't home. And then maybe you don't die, Kevin. But instead, he decides, I'm going to create 50 different death traps where each one in real life would murder this person with zero chance of survival. I'm sorry, you drop an iron from the second floor to the basement, or maybe that was Home Alone 2. I don't know. Anyways, one iron, one floor down, you're dead. You throw a couple of bricks off the roof, that is Home Alone 2, you're dead. You don't need anything else. You don't need flames on your head or roasting your hand or any of this stuff that is just beyond evil that this kid does. Or here's another one I noticed. So we watched both of them back to back. That's why I'm kind of conflating the two. So in Home Alone 2, I can't believe we're talking about this. So in Home Alone, this has nothing to do with what I want to talk about for the podcast, but stick with me. So Home Alone 2, that's the one where he gets to the airport, but he accidentally follows a person who is not his father, and he gets on a plane going to New York instead of to Miami. So he sits down, and he starts talking to the person next to him, but that guy speaks French. So he's talking to Kevin in French, and what does Kevin do? He, while the guy is talking, turns his head away and puts his headphones on. So let's be honest, folks. Kevin is beyond an asshole. And then what does he do? He just goes around educating the world. The arrogance of this 10-year-old walking around educating old people. And of course, he's giving the most generic advice. Maybe you should call your son. Maybe he wants to hear from you. Thanks a lot, Kevin. Nobody ever considered that. But anyways, horrible Christmas movies are still very good. So it turns out that has literally zero to do with today's episode. So I have a list here of tips that I have compiled, things I've grown to subscribe to this year specifically. Maybe not the most insightful, maybe some will be insightful, but I think it's valuable to take where you started at the beginning of the year and then sort of compile everything you've learned, everything you've come to believe, maybe areas where your opinion has changed, not just on code, but politically and socially and everything in between. So let's get started with number one. This is something I talked about a number of episodes ago, and it's really cemented itself in how I see things and how I will treat things in 2018. I've come to believe that social media has the power to do so much incredible damage that you have to treat it as such. You have to treat it as a loaded weapon, weirdly enough, because I remember explaining social media to family and just saying, it's like the water cooler. And it is, but it has the potential to be quite a bit more toxic. It has the potential to ruin a person's career if they happen to subscribe to an idea or a political idea that the core majority does not. It will completely ruin their career because you end up with people taking turns attacking this person. Then it goes viral. Then it starts trending. Then all the blogs pick it up because, trust me, those blogs and those commercial news sites, they're so desperate for content. And I definitely learned that coming from even NetTuts, where it was focused on tutorials, harmless. But still, you don't realize this, but you're desperate for content. It's not like you have content coming out of your ears. You would, and a lot of people won't submit articles they write or editorials or tutorials, in my case, because they think, oh, they already have a huge staff. That is not the case. Too often, they are desperate for good content. So anytime something kind of viral comes around, they're all going to cover it. And it has the potential to really harm people who genuinely mean no harm to anyone. But not just that, it also has this weird effect where, and you've probably seen this on YouTube many times, people talk about it, this idea that every time you engage in social media, little bits of dopamine are coming out and you're getting these little rushes. So when you post something and you see a like, it's like this microscopic level of dopamine that builds you up and we all become dependent upon it. And like I've said before, you see this in the next generation. It's in us as well, but I feel like you're a bit more objective when you look at your younger siblings or your nephews or your grandchildren, where you see them plastered to these phones and they're taking photos of themselves and they take 20 different photos to find the correct one so that they can then share it and then other people can comment on it and like. All of it is this sad, desperate attempt or request for validation. And it's very, very creepy. And this is how it becomes overwhelmingly addictive for huge numbers of people. When you get up in the morning and you check Facebook immediately, or you go to bed and the last thing you do is you scan or refresh your Twitter feed, I think there's a big problem there. So that's my number one realization this year. It is not inherently toxic, but the potential for it to destroy people, I think, is an incredibly dangerous weapon. But nonetheless, I don't think you can just not use it, period. Well, I guess some people do, but I'm not sure how realistic that is for me. So my compromise this year that I will continue is to delete all social media apps. If you have to go to Twitter, you have to open up the browser and sign in. And so often, that process is annoying enough that you won't do it. Or at the very least, you'll kind of wean yourself off of that constant addiction that you're getting in your car and suddenly you need to refresh Twitter? What? Why is that something that even occurs to you? Again, it's that addiction that more people have than are willing to admit. And the same is true during your workday. You know, if you're on a Mac, open up that sidebar and turn on Do Not Disturb. Shut those automatic notifications off. Because I really came to realize notifications are horrible. And I never would have thought that a few years ago. Even the idea of the Apple Watch was cool. Like, oh, you can be notified immediately. If you get an email, you instantly see it on your phone. How great is that? It's horrible. Like, it's unbelievably horrible. It is not something you should strive for. And that's another one I turn off, by the way, now. I don't get any notifications for emails. I realized how much that was draining me. When on a Sunday, I'm trying to spend time with my family, and my phone lights up with 10 different work-related emails that even if I'm not going to take care of that day, it has entered my head, and I'm now thinking about how I will deal with those emails instead of spending time with my family. Turn all of that crap off. Seriously, just cut out all outside interference. It's not good for you. All right, number two. This was the first year I purchased a standing desk, and I could kick myself for not doing this years and years ago. I got to be honest, when I first heard about standing desks, remember those images we're making the rounds of like those treadmill desks where you'd see a video of a guy actually walking on a treadmill while working on his laptop? I thought it was so incredibly silly. And I just kind of grouped them together. And I also, for some reason, I was naive enough to think a standing desk meant a desk where you only stand. And I thought like, well, that's just not realistic. Eventually you need to sit. You know, when you really need to work, when you need to focus on this bit of code, you need to sit down. You can't just keep standing up. I don't think I made the connection that, of course, they go up and down. I know it's really silly of me, but I didn't make that connection. But anyways, a couple months ago, maybe 3 months ago, I purchased a standing desk. I got a nice tabletop from IKEA. Over to the right of me, I have three different buttons. So I have the first button will take the height to a sitting position that I like. The second button takes me to a standing position that I like. And then the third button takes me to a podcasting position which is just a little bit higher to make my mouth fit over the microphone perfectly. And I'm telling you, I consider this one of the best investments I made all year. I even learned when you're standing, the number of calories you burn. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's a significant number, like 100, 150 calories versus sitting. So even if you stand 40% of the day or 50% of the day, think of the strength and the muscle you're building and the calories you're burning that you got for free just for doing your job like usual. And the first day is going to be a little hard. The second day will be a little easier. And now at this point, I'm standing. I've been standing all morning. Eventually, I'm going to sit down for a little bit, and that's okay. I think you, if you do it yourself, you might get into a routine where 30 to 40% of your day is standing and then 50 to 60 is not. That's great. There are no rules here, but I do consider it easily one of the greatest investments I've made this year. Not to mention, I don't think I realized this, but working while standing is actually very, very comfortable. When I'm working on a piece of code and I'm standing, I feel like I have the ability to kind of think and move around and figure things out versus being confined to a chair. Okay, so moving on to number three, the simplest route to get the job done every time. This was something I brought up in my Laracon talk, and it's really something I like to subscribe to across the board. One thing I've learned as I've gotten older is people will, at every pass, they will attempt to sell you on a complicated solution. If you just do A, B, C, and D, then you will achieve the pot of gold, right? Or then you will have this miraculous maintainable code base. All you have to do is all of this, and you follow this to here, and this and here, and read these 30 different books, and then you will have good code. And I may change it, like maybe I will eventually subscribe to that, but I have more understanding of code than anything else in my life. I've been doing it for a third of my life. And I haven't come to that conclusion. In the projects I've built and the big refactors I've done, I've come to the opposite conclusion. The more I push for the simplest possible way to get something done, the cleaner the code ends up being. And when I have to do a refactor, the easier that ends up being because I optimized for deletability. I optimized for fewer lines and fewer files. And when you do that, when you do realize that you need a big refactor here, or you didn't understand the system right in the first place, when you get to that point, the refactor ends up being significantly easier because you hadn't extracted the logic across 30 different files. And every single one of those files that you no longer need has its own set of tests, and you don't want to delete those, and you don't know what to do, and it all just ends up being weird, and then you just don't do the refactor at all. So it's a weirdest thing, but my experiences seem to show that optimizing for a simpler path, a less complex, a less what some would call good design approach, which I think is BS, but optimizing for deletability and clarity ends up being the wiser choice, at least from my experiences. But I would also admit, everything kind of depends upon the team and who you're working with. Generally, my projects are going to be things I work on myself or with a few other people. And those rules are going to be very different than if you're working on a massive enterprise project with 200 different people. You need to have very specific considerations and rules that you implement to keep everyone on the straight and narrow. So I would concede that. But nonetheless, I'm willing to bet the overwhelming majority of people working on projects are not building those massive 200 developer enterprise apps. They're building smaller to medium-sized things. So I think it's wise that the majority of advice caters to them versus the massive enterprise app. They should have their own rules. Just as the server and the scaling and the setup and the distribution that something like Amazon will have really should have no bearing on how you build your blog. You can't even imagine the ways those two code bases are different, and they should not be compared, and the techniques implemented for Amazon should not be implemented for your blog or your website or some little product you're selling. Number four, which one do I want to do? How about this one? I'm going to move this guy up. My whole life, I think I've been pretty good with exercise. All through school, I was into sports and I played soccer and track. But I never treated exercise as a core responsibility of mine. It was just something that happened as a side effect. I wanted to play soccer, and as a result, you end up becoming very fit because you're running across a field nonstop. But after you graduate and you're no longer playing sports anymore, if you don't consider it a core requirement, you kind of stop doing it. Or what you end up doing is, oh, I'm going to start running twice a week. And then 1 week you miss a day. And then 1 week, you just don't do it at all. And it becomes so incredibly inconsistent that you're not really getting much value there. Now, I don't know what it was, but last year, I know exactly what it was. Last year, I was pretty stressed out because my wife was 8 months pregnant. I was a new dad, and I was dealing with what the hell is going to happen in 2 months. It's a very stressful time in your life. When you're trying to get everything ready, you're trying to figure out what your role is and things. And I started gaining a little weight. And it's funny because you don't always notice it. It happens very gradually. It's not like I just suddenly looked down and saw some big belly. Usually it's more distributed. You add a little weight here, a little weight here. Your chin begins to sag a little bit. And this is where I noticed it. I saw a photo of myself with my wife, and I noticed that my neckline had changed. It begun to sag. It wasn't clearly defined anymore. And this started to scare me. I'd never really dealt with that before. But still, we were so close to this baby being born. I didn't do anything because there was a million different things on my mind and countless other things we had to set up and get a baby room prepared and all that stuff that new parents do that you probably don't need to do, but you think you need to do it because you're being a proper adult. But anyways, this year was the first year I decided, okay, I'm going to make exercise a core of my daily life. It's not something I do 2 times a week, any day that I can find it. No, because I know myself well enough that I'm not going to stick to it. It has to be a core part of my workflow, just like having lunch is a core part of your day, right? I decided exercise under no circumstances can be skipped. So you decide how your routine. My routine is 6 days a week. That doesn't mean I'm always like killing myself every day. Some days, all I have energy for is like 30 minutes. Other days, I will do an hour. But the key for me is it has to be those 6 days a week. I don't get to say I'm too tired. I seriously have a rule. You do not get to chicken out of this, unless you're sick, of course. But as a general rule, you don't get to chicken out. And once it becomes part of your routine, you look forward to it. That was a huge realization for me. It's something that I have grown to look forward to. And in fact, it's like one of the few, it's like the 1 hour of every day, especially I'm married with a kid. As a dad, I think any dads with toddlers would agree, you have no time to yourself. All of your time is family and then getting work done and then getting bills done and helping clean the house. You have such little time that you can dedicate to yourself. And so often, once you do hit that point of the day when you have time to yourself, you just want to get in bed. You're so tired. But when I go up to my office for 45 minutes to an hour, it is me time, and I've grown to really appreciate that. I put on my AirPods, I listen to podcasts, I watch YouTube videos, and actually, I never listen to music, weirdly enough. Because when I was younger and I would exercise, I would listen to music. I would listen to rock music. But now, I don't do that at all. It's only podcasts or YouTube discussions or debates that I watch. So it ends up being this nice thing where I am exercising and getting stronger, but I'm also exercising my brain in areas that aren't related to code at all. And what's useful is listen to podcasts or watch YouTube videos from people that you disagree with. I don't know, we've gotten into this mindset where if you disagree with somebody, you don't listen to them or you label them with a slur. You call them a bigot or a Nazi or you call them a liberal nut or any of that stuff where it somehow grants you the right to not consider what they have to say. So listen to people on the other side of the aisle from you. If you're very religious, listen to Waking Up with Sam Harris. Actually, listen to that either way. It's a really good podcast. Yes, he will talk about God and atheism, but he also discusses everything. If you're good with money or you're not good with money, listen to the Freakonomics podcast. If you're a conservative, then listen to the Young Turks. Then listen to Bill Maher's show, which you can get for free as a podcast. Listen to people who completely disagree with you. Now, if you would call yourself a Democrat or a leftist, then listen to people like Ben Shapiro or Steven Crowder or even Joe Rogan to some extent. He's not really conservative, but you might call him more of a libertarian. I'm not sure. And you know what? It's okay if you listen to them and you still think they are entirely wrong. That's totally okay. The key is you now know what they actually think versus what somebody else has told you they think. And one thing I've learned this year is what other people tell you, such and such people think, is almost never even remotely correct. And you start realizing these people are protesting this person coming to speak at a college, but the things they are saying in no way reflect what they actually believe, which makes you think they don't actually know this person. They just know what slurs have been thrown at that person. This is something I've really grown to realize this year. So either way, do some exercise and then listen to people who don't agree with you. I promise the only thing that will happen as a result is you will become stronger and you will become more aware of what everyone outside of your bubble believes. And that brings me to my next realization. I think I've always known this, but it's something I specifically subscribe to now. You might have heard me say it before. The overwhelming majority of people have no earthly idea what they're talking about. And I include myself in this, so I'm not separating myself here. It's one of the most freeing things to realize, I don't know what I'm talking about here. Because we all get into these debates and discussions, and sometimes they get heated on Twitter with strangers you've never met, and you're defending this thing, and have you ever backed up and thought, why am I so passionate about this when I seriously have no clue what I'm talking about? The most recent example of this in the US is related to tax reform. And I saw people battling each other on Twitter, just where it gets really heated and mean-spirited. And they're not accountants. They're not economists. I'm sorry, unless you actually know what you're talking and the effects and the ramifications of tax reform, why are you engaging in the conversation? You do not know what you're talking about. On both sides here, you don't have the equipment. The extent of your equipment might be that you went to a website and used one of those tax estimate calculators, and it came out lower or it came out higher, and then that's the ammo you're going to use. That's the extent of your understanding. You haven't read the plan because the people who voted on it didn't even have enough time to read the plan. So I don't trust that the senators know what they're talking about in this area, let alone some random person on Twitter who watched an MSNBC segment or a Fox News segment, and they're not going to regurgitate it on Twitter as if they know what they're talking about. I first heard Stephen Fry say this maybe a year ago. I don't have the quote, but he said something along the lines of, I'm quoting, after 74 years of my life, I've come to the realization that just about nobody knows what they're talking about. And immediately when I heard that, I was like, he's completely right. Think of it this way. Like I said earlier, I've been writing code for over a dozen years, 13, I've lost count. And so you could say that over a third of my existence, I have focused on this. And even at that point, I would still submit to you that in so many ways, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't understand things. Things are still hard for me. I figured out some things, but that just makes me all the more aware of all the other areas that I don't even begin to understand. And that is the thing that I know more than any other thing in my lifetime. Think about that. And then apply it to yourself. I do find it freeing to just accept, I don't know what I'm talking about here. I don't know why I'm getting offended about this discussion when I don't know. I don't know if higher taxes or lower taxes have a good effect on the economy. You don't either. Actual economists, who I would say have more right than anyone to discuss it, disagree with one another. So why are we talking about it, right? That's a very freeing realization of mine this year. Okay, next up, let's continue on to there are a million and one ways to build an application. Now, I've always known this, but this year has been further proof and further evidence, at least to me, that this is a correct way to look at things. Developers have a tendency to focus so much on craft and proper ways and clean code and maintainability, and they just throw around these words so much, when the reality is, were you able to launch this thing and solve problems for somebody or help somebody make money or use a service or ease their life in some way? That's the only thing that matters. What underlying architecture style or what pattern you implemented here for quote-unquote clean code, nobody cares except the small handful of developers who will shame you if you don't follow that particular regimen. I promise, the people using your application every day don't care. Now, usually the argument here is that, okay, great, you can do whatever you want, but down the line, when the site grows and your unmaintainable code base becomes an issue, I'm the one that then has to go in and fix all of it for you, right? That ends up being the argument. Now, again, that that damn arrogance of, oh, I'm going to have to come and fix this. Like, stop patting yourself on the back. Drives me nuts. But you know what? If that day happens where your site has grown and grown, and suddenly you find that you didn't code it in a way to account for what your site has become or what your service has become, and it needs a big refactor or even a rewrite, then that's okay. Because you should be so incredibly lucky to get to that point of success and popularity where you think, we might want to take some time to retool a little bit. Because I promise you, the overwhelming majority of sites never get there. The 90% of businesses, that's a made-up stat, but I think it's really high, a huge percentage of businesses never even get past the five-year mark. Even more don't get to the point of profitability. So it ends up being a non-issue. You're here worrying about what will happen in 7 years when the site needs to scale even further. You know what? All they need to worry right now is the first 6 months and how they're going to make their first dollar. Once again, whether they use dependency injection here or there, it doesn't factor into the equation. And another thing you're going to learn is your understanding of the product or your understanding of the code base now at the beginning is not even going to be remotely as sophisticated and well-informed as it will be in a few years. When you actually know what you're building and you know how it should work, it's not something where you just sit down or you write a test and suddenly you understand the domain. Many times that understanding of the domain takes years to figure out, to the point that when you do a rewrite, it's far and away the correct thing to do, the responsible thing to do, because your new understanding is so much more intelligent and informed than what you originally started out with when you didn't really know what was going on and you were kind of feeling your way through. So again, there are a million and one ways to build an app. Don't let anyone shame you or make you think you're doing it wrong. You're not. The only rule is do your best. Try to do as well as you can. If you don't end up writing tests for the site because it's hard for you, that's okay. Don't let anyone shame you. I would recommend consider it because it will give you more confidence, but there's only so many hours in the day. We're doing the best that we can. And those who would make you feel poorly for the techniques you used don't get to sit at the dinner table. I'm sorry, they don't get to sit down. Now, I have one or two more here, but we're running really high on time. I have one here written, a culture of offense. You know what? I don't even want to talk about it because ironically, I didn't want to talk about it because people are going to get offended. Let's leave it at this. I realized, especially this year, that virtue signaling is a thing across the board. It is a thing that people do. And I realized that you get bonus points the more you assign labels to others that raises you above them. It doesn't seem like we have a culture of discussion or understanding or compromise. We have a culture of us versus them, and they are bad people, and we are good people. And it's so overwhelming. And you see it so, so very clearly on Twitter, which brings me all the way back to the first item on this list, where we discussed social media and its potential to become toxic, to encourage mob behavior, to encourage or to tempt the worst sides of us, the sides that are desperate for validation. And all the while, you're staring at a screen instead of looking at your family or going outside. You're staring at a screen getting mad at somebody, or you're staring at a screen requesting validation for the dinner you had last night and how many likes that dinner will get. Or you're advertising yourself as so much better off. Look at all of the highlights of my life. While we all kind of know that our lives are not that great, but we also know that it's going to have the effect of others seeing our amazing lives, and as a result, potentially feeling worse about their own lives. It's a chain reaction. It's this cycle that goes around and around. And meanwhile, we end up spending more time on social media every year than we did the year before. I don't even know if that's true. I'm talking out of my ass here. And that brings me back to the other item. Nobody knows what they're talking about, and that's a great way to end 2017.